Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Motor City Metrics podcast, second one this week. As we're doing our 2024 season preview, alongside me, Chris Brown, and our special guest this evening, she's getting the five-time jacket. If you're familiar with the SNL skit, you know, they get the jacket with the mark. Crystal is getting her first, she'll be getting a jacket. So, sorry, from the Southside Socks website, she has many titles. This is your fifth podcast this week, is that right?
I mean, maybe six at this point. I know I have two left. Two left after tonight. I don't know. It's all blurry.
Oh, so I mean, I know this is the beginning of the year and everything. So it looks like too. You look like you have a new setup too as well.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm actually just up in Illinois because I'll be at opening day tomorrow. So.
Cool. Are you going to check out are you doing anything to check out the Indians opening day, the Indianapolis Indians?
Yeah, that's my plan. I still need to look at their schedule. I've been kind of eyeing it, and there are certain dates I definitely would love to go to. But yeah, I'm hoping to make it to opening day there too.
Awesome. Yeah, that's for Friday. That's for Toledo. We'll be out there for that. But let's get right into it. The White Sox have had probably one of the most, To be polite, a troubling last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, but an organization that has suffered through a lot of turmoil, just turnover, just a lot of really stupid things said in the media by your owner. I'm just pointing out things the way they are, but where to begin? I mean, first and foremost, when we never really got your reaction about the Getz hire. I mean, what was your first reaction with that?
Oh, I mean, so I got so excited when I heard Rick Hahn was gone and Ken Williams was gone. And so for like that 30 seconds of joy knowing they were gone, but then the realization hit that, oh, it's just going to be Chris Getz. And he has had one of the worst farm systems for the past 7 years now. So immediately I was like, oh, great. So he can't do a minor league job very well. So great. Let's promote him to the major league for my team. He's just as bad. He might be a little more ballsy than Rick Hahn ever was, but he's still terrible. And the offseason really just proved that. So I think we all knew it was coming and we just had our 30 seconds of joy before that realization hit.
Right. So one of the comments in here, Joe wanted to know, did the White Sox start going downhill with La Russa?
I mean, I don't want to place the entire blame on La Russa, but it definitely caused a really big shift in dynamics, and, you know, fans were mad. Everyone was mad, and I don't think the players really fully accepted it either. And I know the clubhouse started going downhill. Things were just getting out of hand. Tony was falling asleep in the dugout. He didn't know rules anymore. When you bring someone that's been in retirement for over a decade out of retirement, you're not going to win any games. And I think he's pushed a lot of players away. I think he pushed a lot of fans away, and he was just really a disgrace. And I think he was kind of the linchpin to an already crumbling system.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, nothing. Yeah, I was just saying, you know, it's still kind of stunning from my perspective. I think on this version of the podcast last year, I said that I thought the White Sox still had the most talent in the AL Central and had a chance to win if they stayed healthy.
Yeah.
And everything went south again. And it's just stunning because, you know, the Tigers have been rebuilding forever, right? It's going on 10, 11 years now. And we got to see from afar how the White Sox, like, oh, they seemed like they were the up-and-coming squad, going to be the toast of the Central for a while. And they had basically a year and a half. And then it all fell apart again. And it's just kind of stunning. And it's, I don't know, there are people, I know Tigers fans are like, hey, we don't want to do this like the White Sox did. We want to do this right, slow and steady. But I don't know, is there anything that you can point to specifically? I guess it would be the La Russa maybe, but anything that really caused this to fall apart so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, obviously La Russa was the biggest part in that. And I love, there's a comment that says somewhere in the multiverse, the Sox hired Hinch, which is funny because when they announced Tony La Russa, they actually, and this is honest to God truth, they tweeted out a picture about the Tony La Russa hire with AJ Hinch's autograph on it, and then had to very quickly snap that right off the internet. But it's real. There are screenshots that they're still in existence. So that is hilarious. But no, and Tony didn't help. Their pitching, honestly, just went on a downward spiral. Like, I know they didn't know what to ever do with Michael Kopech. And now Michael Kopech is just broken. And he's going to be in the bullpen. And he was supposed to be this phenomenal pitcher. And he is. He's got the stuff, but they never knew what to do with him. They misused their bullpen and they couldn't keep a starter healthy. And then when you add that drama into the clubhouse, it's just an implosion. And it's not gonna get any better. I still don't think it's great.
You know, the one thing that I kind of miffed about a little bit is the fact that here they are with all this international talent. You look at Luis Robert Jr., who's still on the team, and there's just this abundance of international, the ability to at least develop international prospects. But that the question in that Crystal becomes then, it just seems like they haven't, that's the, it almost like seems like something's lost in translation there with that. Is it, I'm just wondering if how much of the it's either development or just identifying talent badly.
So what I will say, and we kind of just refer to this as the Cuban pipeline, it's always kind of been there. Jose Abreu, once he came along, it just expanded and it was wonderful. And people wanted to come to the White Sox because of Jose Abreu. You know, they saw how he was playing. They saw that it was possible. And we just developed this very strong connection with international signings, and we were able to develop them for the most part. Again, then, you know, Getz comes in and development is lost. But now, like, Jose Abreu is gone and it's just slowly sinking down. Like, this could be Moncada's last year. I don't remember how much is left on Luis Robert's contract, but again, I don't think Moncada is going to be there next year. So they're just slowly destroying this stuff that was built, you know, back when Manny Mendoza was on the White Sox. Like, that's how long it's been going. And they're just letting it deteriorate by just not caring anymore.
Yeah, I recall what Alexi Ramirez was there for a while. And even, you know, some guys didn't work out. I think it was Diane Vicieto didn't work out so great. But if you have that pipeline, we've talked about this a ton because the Tigers have had very little success in the international market. Sometimes it just feels like if you get that one player, and Jose Abreu seemed like that player, then yeah, everybody wants to come there. But I guess it can go away just as rapidly. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and Jose Abreu was kind of the glue to the team. He was the leader, even if he doesn't think he was the leader. He was really the glue that kept that team together. And with him going to, you know, our mortal enemy, I think it really set the team up for failure. There was no real leadership anymore.
I was going to ask about Dylan Cease because, you know, I guess Robert is still kind of the last bit of that, you know, title team.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there was a lot of speculation about Cease getting traded, but mm-hmm. I was curious, you know, did you think it was going to happen, and how were you, how'd you feel about the return that they got from that?
I knew it was going to happen, and they gave us decent prospects, but we can't develop prospects to save our lives. So that you could give us your number one and number two prospect, and we're going to destroy them in half a season.
Well, optimism.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's no optimism here.
All right. Well, let's get into the season.
Well, yeah, and that's so. That, yes, the looking into the 2024 roster right now, there is a lot of, you know, kind of really fun headlines. The White Sox, Pedro Grifol motivated for the 2024 season, which I would, one of those headlines I go, well, they should be motivated. Yeah. But as far as this roster breaks down, there, I mean, predictions across the board, we're looking at possibly about 100 loss season. I don't know. I'm looking at this team, and I'm looking at guys like, I have no idea who Tanner Banks is. I mean, it's like this. I mean, I did like the sign of Eric Fetty.
Fetty,
thank you, Eric Fetty. But beyond that, I don't know. I'm just trying to maybe find a spin to this, but I'm looking at the infield right now, and I don't know, what do you consider? Okay, let's just go with one nice thing forward. What is a position of strength, you think, on this team, Crystal?
Honestly, I still feel like they can have really good at bats, because you do have very powerful bats like Yoan Moncada. When he's healthy, he's phenomenal. You've got Luis Robert, again, always good. And then, yes, thank you. And then, you know, when Eloy's healthy, he's good. And people think he actually might finally have a year. He still has yet to play a full year with this team because of his injuries. So, again, if he stays healthy, those are really just deadly at bats. And, like, shockingly enough, Paul DeJong was not a bad pickup for them. He's kind of proven that in spring training. His at bats have actually been pretty decent. Same with Dominic Fletcher. Like, they've got the potential to be really good at the plate if that plate discipline is there.
I can see it.
I like that. Yeah, I like the Fletcher. That was a solid kind of under the radar move.
Yeah,
because he was he did some things with Arizona, and to get him, I thought was pretty nice. And I'm looking. I didn't pay any attention to the White Sox spring training because,
yeah,
you know, they're a Cactus League team, right? So I didn't even see them. But it looks like a lot of their starters actually performed pretty well in spring. I'm looking at Nestrini had I think he's planning getting on the in the rotation, right? And then Fetty had a good, and Soroka, which we talked about that. I think that's a fun story, and I hope that he can come back. But and the Tigers, of course, are going to see Garrett Crochet, which is a fun story in its own. I'm curious how you feel that's going to go.
So I love Garrett Crochet, and he definitely has the potential to be incredible. But this is his first real start in the major leagues. You know, he came to us as a starter that never started. He was just in the bullpen constantly, and he could throw 100 easy. You know, he's got a beautiful windup. He's so talented, but he's also coming off Tommy John and has never started. So it's one of those things where you just kind of hope for the best, because you know he's a talented kid, and he did have a really good spring training. So hopefully it's the right move. You know, it was just like a little swap with Kopech and Crochet. And I think it's the right move overall. It's just a little nerve-wracking to know that he's your opening day starter, maybe your ace of the season.
Yeah, there's the most common thread among Tiger fans, or the keeps coming up about the White Sox, is thin, pitching thin. But the one prospect that I wanted to ask about, and I was a big fan of him when the whole process of him starting along, was Oscar Colas. Horrible spring. I'm just wondering if it's something in between the years with him, or is it just too much for him at this point?
I think it might still be too much because, again, he's still really underdeveloped. He can, you know, tear everything. He can tear everybody up when he's down in Charlotte. He's phenomenal. He's great. And then he comes up here. And again, it's a really, it's a different energy. I'm sorry.
Put Samuel's comment. Samuel in the chat goes, Crystal, you're talking to a fan base who a few years ago had Matthew Boyd as an ace. We sympathize.
Yeah, I feel your pain. I mean, we had Chris Sale, and those were good days. Oh, it's been really dark since. But yeah, I think Oscar just needs a lot more time to develop because he's really hit or miss when he's up here, which is unfortunate. Like, he'll have these bursts that he's just incredible, and then the next day, it's like he strikes out looking every single at bat, and that's frustrating.
Because the biggest thing I look at with Kolas is the raw, like, in terms of his ability to field the ball, he's a good defender. Mm-hmm. We knew he pitched before in Cuba, but it just seems like there's, especially the one thing about Charlotte, even with in terms of like some of the numbers I saw down there too, it just seems like the strikeout rate, like the strikeout, even the strikeout, like the eye, his eye. I thought he had a good eye down there too, and it just seems like now he comes up here and it's just they just know exactly how to attack him, and he just doesn't. It's not responding correctly.
Yeah. His case is very frustrating because I know he has it in him to be great, but he's just too easy for all the pros that have been here for a decade now.
I know you've been having some technical issues.
Yes, my technical support person just got here, which is my wife.
I know you have a couple questions for Crystal.
My question, I guess, and if you covered it, just shut me up right away, which my wife feels free to do as well. I caught a little bit about developing talent. What were your feelings about staying in-house with Chris Getz?
Yeah, we did briefly cover it, and I was just so incredibly disappointed because he's failed epically down, you know, in the minors. He can't control a team there. And for him to come in and replace an already really incapable GM was just a slap in the face to fans, in all honesty. Like, they didn't look outside anywhere. It was Rick is gone, we're bringing Chris up, no one cares, we don't need anybody, we've, you know, it's kind of like the whole joke about how you want McDonald's but you've got McDonald's at home. Like, he's our McDonald's at home, but it's not good, and your mom baked the fries in the oven, and it's just
it's a soggy.
It's just not good.
Yeah. It reminds me of I think it was the Eddie Murphy joke from Raw. Oh. And he was talking about
like, my mom made McDonald's. The peppers in him, and yeah.
Yeah. He's like, this ain't no hamburger from McDonald's.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think I saw, I don't know if it was today or so, it was a quote from Chris Getz talking about how they think that they can go out there and beat anybody. And it's, you know, on the one hand, like, of course, you're always going to say that, right? But
yeah.
The thing I like to joke about is I think it was the 2019 Tigers, which were just abject. I think Ron Gardenhire put a laminated picture of the World Series trophy on the door to the clubhouse and said, if you don't think we're winning this, then don't come in. It was like, all right, okay, I get it. But no.
Knock it off.
We're not winning that. So what's the path out of this? Is it so dark right now that you can't even see the dawn, or is there a way that you envision White Sox, you know, getting back to respectability in a year or two?
The path out of it, and I hate to be morbid, but the path out of it is Jerry Reinsdorf dying or selling the team. And he will not be selling the team, so Jerry Reinsdorf will be dying before it gets better.
I always say that about other things. The funeral home will determine the outcome eventually for you.
And speaking of Jerry Reinsdorf, the one thing about this offseason, Crystal, that I feel that is – it reminds me of my father, his – him at like just some of the things that are getting leaked in the media, like he the ask he's asking for the stadium funds, I mean, Nashville is even pointing like, are you high? Like, it's just, and the reason why I'm reminds me of my father, it's just reminds me of my dad. I'm not trying to be morbid when I say this, but when my dad got dementia, it just sounds like an old man like ranting. It's just like, dude, what are you doing? And that's where it's like, it's embarrassing. And because I know for a fact that White Sox fans are some of the most passionate, smart fans out there. They're loyal, but come the F on. I mean, come on. I mean, when you're sitting there, like, he embarrasses himself on a daily basis out there.
Yeah.
I mean, what was one of those things that you heard while you're sitting around with the family and you're just going, look at your phone, you're like, all right, dad, or person of figure, like, come on. I mean, what was that come on moment that you're just like, you had enough?
I mean, Chicago is broke. We charge tax. Like, you have to pay for your plastic bags if you go to a Target, if you go to a grocery store. Like, you're paying for your plastic bags because they need that money to come back into the city. Mm-hmm. And yes, they have this wonderful patch of land in the 78, and it would be a great place to put it. But he went in thinking that they were just going to give him $4 billion. They were going to give a billionaire $4 billion.
That's insane.
And Jerry reminds me so much of just like the racist uncle that you have. And your mom's like, oh, just, you know, another time. Just don't think about it. And you like,
he was in Vietnam. Leave it alone.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
that's who he is. And he's got two teams in the city. He owns the Bulls.
What an asshole.
I recently found out that Benny the Bull makes $400,000 a year.
What?
The mascot?
Whoa, mascot.
I will do that for half of it. Sweet. I'll do it for half.
Wait. Benny the Bull makes $400,000 a year.
Yes, he does.
Am I ass with my bachelor's degree and all my student loan debt? Because I'm not a damn fucking mascot. Get the...
That comment you just pulled up about throwing Jerry Krause under the bus. That's what Jerry does.
Mm-hmm.
What in the fuck are we doing here? Hell, I don't know. The poor bull shows up at a lot of libraries and grocery store openings.
He is everywhere. South Pole was out today just giving away hot dogs.
What am I doing in my life?
In front of a Chick-fil-A.
That's the Chick-fil-A. You're going to anger them with giving away hot dogs. But that, it's the most a mascot has made since the Pirates mascot in the 80s, I think.
So funny you say that. I just recorded an episode on one of my podcasts about the Pittsburgh drug trials.
I saw you tweet something about a mascot in the 80s, and I was like, all right, I know what that's got to be. So,
yes.
If nobody's ever looked at that, then. Yeah, you'll give a shout out to that. Some people can learn that if they don't know about it.
The comment of the night from Cameron: the pitch of Jason and Benetti will pay you more than Benny the Bill.
I guess that is one thing we haven't talked to you about.
We've been avoiding. You know what? Chris, I've been avoiding talking about that.
The Tigers stole your announcer, but I know we've heard enough of national broadcasts and stuff with Benetti to know he's awesome. But I don't know if you have any particular things you like about him or want us to look for.
Gosh, Jason is the best in the business. Like, he is somehow the most professional person you can listen to, but also just the funniest and will just give you the most off the wall jokes. Like, he's a big Breaking Bad fan and he's a big Arrested Development fan.
Outstanding.
And he'll just make like these random 90s references all the time that like you have to really be listening to catch it. But if you are, which I always was, I was like, oh, that was a good one, Jason. That was a good one. And he's so funny. He's so kind. During the pandemic, when, you know, nobody was able to go to those games, he was on Twitter, basically, because he's got that iconic voice. Everybody knows Jason Benetti's voice. And he was on Twitter just taking requests from people for, like, shout-outs to someone. You just, like, DM him what you wanted to say, and he would record a video of him saying it. And, you know, tag that person or, you know, share it. However, like, he's just
one of the
most sincere people in existence. And, you know, he's inspired my son. My son will be in high school this fall. And he I met him.
I had a pleasure of meeting him a couple of years ago with my son.
Yes.
And he's in high school already?
Yeah. I'm only like 26. Yes, so,
I
do.
I mean, I don't want to do the math, but.
But yeah, he his high school he's going to does have like a trade school element too, which is a phenomenal. Like they have a career center, and one of them is broadcasting. And freshman year, he can take principles of broadcasting. So he's clearly going to do that. And then he's going to try to go to a great school. But it's because he's been listening to Jason Benetti for so long that he just idolizes him. We all do. So, you know, to have that talent gone, and for someone who was a lifelong Sox fan who got his dream job, only to be told that Jerry didn't think he was funny and he hated him eating on TV.
Okay.
That was his reasoning. He didn't think he was funny and he hated that they would always bring in food on TV and he would eat it. Like they're bringing in things from the stadium that they want you to like new items that they want you to try.
So there's some more get off my lawn kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Chicago sucks. So are you going to miss him harmonizing with Steve Stone to the Nationwide jingle?
I will even miss that, as cringy as it was. I will. And I have a feeling, you know, I'll be at opening day tomorrow. I have a good feeling that even though he's not going to be recognized by the White Sox because it's Jerry, I have a feeling that he will be shown a ton of love from all those fans because we all just adore him.
I just don't see the thing about Jerry Reinsdorf is, I mean, obviously he's too high above in his ivory tower to care what people think. But at the same time, I would think that you're that, well, I mean, never mind. You also threw a dead man, on, like Samuel mentioned earlier. Yeah. You threw Jerry Krause under the bus. A man that literally gave, who ran both your organizations because you're too cheap to go elsewhere to get out of that. He didn't. And yeah, go ahead.
Jerry was... Krause was just honored very recently at the United Center. Fans booed his wife.
Yeah, I remember that. Oh my gosh.
Booed his wife because Jerry Reinsdorf is such a piece of garbage that this is what he did to his legacy. And I was like, hey, do you remember those six rings you got when he was there? Do you remember any of that? Like, do you remember why you make so much money? And why you can still sell at the United Center for a subpar Bulls team?
Yeah. He literally, Reinsdorf never had to raise, because Michael Jordan was making so much money on endorsements, it didn't matter. I mean,
I got a few names I'd like to call him.
Like just, it blows my mind that, like, everybody who complains, I mean, you can say, well, Chris Illich or anything, but Jerry, I mean, I put Jerry Reinsdorf up there with Jeffrey Loria as the two worst owners of all time ever. I mean, Donald Sterling goes up there. There's a lot more. I could probably, if I think
throw the A's owner in there too.
Yeah. That guy sucks too. But as far as just how are you just so disconnected to the public and just go, you look the poor, I mean, his wife did not deserve that at all.
I think you guys remember last season when we had paid to get those billboards up that said, sell the team, Jerry. We put one super close to the ballpark and another one that was kind of on his way to the ballpark. I mean, that's how frustrated we were, and he didn't care. People wear sell the team shirts constantly. They wear shirts of him with a big clown nose. You know, like he doesn't care. He is rolling in his money. He does not care about the little people that pay his bills.
No, not at all. Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Chris. I was just saying, I mean, I feel, you know, this is division rival, but we've met so many cool White Sox fans and podcasters and stuff that I really do feel for you guys. It's tough sledding sometimes when the team is terrible and there's no hope. I know we keep waiting for the Tigers to finally, you know, play good baseball. So people start tuning in more, but, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what, I guess the blessing is what, that he is what, 90 something?
He's getting up there. He's getting up there. But I also feel like he sold his soul to the devil so that he's going to live forever. Let's see. He's
88, yeah. So
is there a succession plan? Does he have relatives to take over, or will it be
Kieran Culkin?
So he does not. So, okay. His son, Michael, is the one running the operation for the Bulls right now. He does not want his children to take over for the White Sox when he's gone. I don't know why. I don't know what his plan is, but all I know is it's not going to be Michael Reinsdorf owning both teams anymore. So, I mean,
maybe you're taking to a better place right there.
They also could just be in Nashville. Someone could just come in and swoop them up and move them down south.
Or move them to, I think, Charlotte too. I would rather be ironic if they end up moving to their AAA affiliate. I would like that would be the perfect ending to that. I can see that happening because even Michael Jordan's based out of Charlotte too. So I mean,
yeah,
it would just be full circle. But so what is your last question before you get out of here? What is your official prediction for the White Sox this year? Do the White Sox win 70 games? Do the White Sox win 60 games? How bad is it going to be this year, Crystal? Because you like to keep it. Everybody likes, by the way, everybody likes the fact you're keeping it real. So
that's all you can do. So we actually just did a predictions thing over on Southside Sox where we all kind of, I mean, we picked all of baseball, but then we had a very quick little section of just White Sox stuff, and I picked them to win 61 games.
All right.
That sounds and about I really right. feel like that was a pretty honest prediction. I don't think anyone in our group picked over 70 games.
I was going to say, I'm going to say 59. I mean, I'm looking at this team, and I'm just like, who's going to win? I don't know where it's coming from. I think it's going to be just barely 60. I think it's going to be 59 wins. That's going to be my prediction for the White Sox. Crystal, plug away. What do you have going on?
Oh, gosh.
Where people can find you. Yeah, plug away.
Yeah, so primarily I am at Southside Sox. I do a bunch of managing, editing. Woo, I can't talk. And then contributing, obviously, I do every Friday night. I do coverage. I also have two podcasts there. One is Visiting Dugout, which you guys are familiar with. At least two of you have been on it and probably will again this year. And that is just me talking to someone from another team where we preview series and talk about all the pains of baseball. And then we resurrected Soxy Chicks with my friend Bailey. Nice. That just came back today. It'll be out this weekend. And then I'm on Casual Die Hard, which was previously Willett's Pen. It was just all Mets, and now we've kind of just blown it up. But we just started a podcast over there called Dugout of History with Colleen Sullivan. And again, we talk about fun historic things. Our first episode was just released on Monday. It was about Merkel's boner. And the next one is Pittsburgh drug tiles. So we have this huge list of things that we just want to talk about that people probably aren't aware of. I mean, she wasn't aware of the Pittsburgh stuff. So yeah, that one's really fun. So those are the big three that you can find me on.
I'm looking forward to the Pittsburgh drug trials because I know that outside of a Sports Illustrated archive article I read a few years ago, I don't really know too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's kind of really the baseball is trying to bury it as much as possible, correct?
Yeah. Well, from a PR standpoint. I was typing up my notes for it. I was finishing them up and I always give them over to my husband. I'm like, hey, will you just, make sure we're not like out of order. Make sure this flows. And he's looking at it. And this is about the time he was starting to really get into baseball. It was mid-80s.
Mm. Yeah.
And he, he's always liked the Mets too. And obviously, gosh, I just forgot his name.
Daryl Strawberry?
No, not Daryl Strawberry. Now he's a broadcaster.
Keith Hernandez.
Yes, Keith Hernandez. Yeah. Thank you. I don't know why that name escaped. He loves Keith Hernandez. And he's like reading this. And he's like, I didn't know any of these things. And then he was like, I loved Tim Raines and he's always sliding. That's why he was sliding, because he's got Coke vials in his back pocket that he didn't want to break.
Head first slide. Yeah.
And I was telling Colleen this while we were recording, and she's like, I have a Tim Raines bobblehead where he's sliding. I was like, you better go check his back pocket. You don't know what's in there. That's nice. And I'm just, I'm my husband's like reading this and I'm just watching his face and he's just like, oh, yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know what? Why did I never hear about this? And I'm like, sorry, I just ruined your childhood.
I mean, you look at some of those pictures back then with the, like your adult eye, because when you look at some of the baseball cards, you look at their eyes, you're like, oh, like they have that, you know, like you I don't know, like life experience happens, you're just like, oh, either, you know, like before you were just you contributed to whatever as a kid. Now, as you're an adult, you're like, all well, night bender.
He mentioned one of the people, that one of the guys that were involved was like the first baseball card he ever got. And he was like, that just ruined it. So, yeah, it should be good. So, that should be up Monday. So, if you follow me, you'll see it.
I'm looking forward. I'm stoked about that. Yeah. I'm stoked about that.
That'd be great.
Merkel's Boner was the 1908, it was a shortstop, right? Cubs.
Yep. Okay. Cubs and Giants game.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that episode's out if you want to hear about that. But
I'm seriously, that's such a great idea, Crystal, and I'm looking forward to hearing more of these cool stories. I mean, maybe one day, maybe about Eric Chow. I'm sure you know about Eric Chow, right? The former Padres pitcher.
Yeah, that sounds really familiar.
Yeah, there's a really good. There was a good documentary about him in the 80s. I remember he was the guy who gave up the Pete Rose home run, or a hit rather, was into some really weird religious things and ended up committing suicide. There's a really dark.
Yes, that. I do remember that.
Yeah, there and him in the whole Donnie Moore thing too with the Angels too, but that's another one. But anyway,
tons of things.
I'm just so stoked because seriously, those are kind of cool stories that should be out and about in baseball and should be brought up to light. So I'm glad you guys are doing that. Yeah. Thank you again, Crystal, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yes, thank you guys so much.
Good to see ya.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So we are Cameron on stage here. Cameron.
Oh, hello. Cameron. He was hiding behind Crystal all the time. you know, I've never, I think it was at the 1925 World Series. I don't hear this brought up much. Maybe it used to be the one that ended with Babe Ruth getting caught stealing second base.
I think it was the 1925 World Series. Yeah.
I feel like that would be kind of frowned upon these days. Get caught stealing. But then, you know, I've read more about it and apparently it was like a failed hit and run or something like that. But it's still like, yeah, geez. That you think that there'd be a little bit more fame behind that, but whatever.
He did enough to cover it up, I guess, with his other exploits.
Yeah. I guess 700 home runs is okay.
Yeah. Against, superior pitching, but what are we going to, yeah. Anyways, that's not.
Hey, those 84 mile an hour fastballs had some life to them.
Cameron, how you feeling, man?
Better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm really, really. That's I wish that upon nobody. That is the worst.
Food poisoning from fast food, so it's like peak food poisoning.
Yeah,
it is. That's crazy. Yeah,
it's insane. All right, so I wanted to go into the rosters a little bit because now the rosters are official, and we can go into exactly just kind of breaking down a little bit of. I don't want to go position. I mean, we can look at some of the strengths, the weaknesses of the Tigers, and that's what we'll start with. So, gentlemen, I'll start with the outfield. Let's go into what is, to you, a strength of this team? Chris, I mean, in terms of, like, looking at position players from, like, we go from the infield out, and I'll ask the audience the same thing. Infield, outfield, bullpen, starting staff. Weakness, or excuse me, strength. You mean the one you think is the strongest?
Yeah, I guess I would go with the outfield. I think, you know, Riley Green, we believe is the best hitter on the team. I'm very high on Parker Meadows. I don't know if I'm quite as high as Jerry. I don't know, but I've long maintained that Parker Meadows was being underrated by just about everyone. And then you've got Carpenter and Canna out there. I mean, that could be a very productive outfield in just about every way. You know, I mean, I think the strength of the team is probably the starting pitching, theoretically, but position player wise, I really like the outfield. Yeah.
Cameron, what about you?
I think the starting pitching is slightly more of a strength than the outfield, just because of the depth. Even if one guy goes down, got a dozen more waiting in Toledo. So.
All right, Uper.
Yeah, I'd lean starting pitching as a whole, really the whole staff. But I took a quick count, and it's unofficial because I did it in like 30 seconds. But it seems like at Toledo, there are 10 pitchers who have major league experience. I mean, one of them is like Brendan Hennepy, who it's not great experience, but still he was there, right? But they have a lot of pitchers in Toledo who have been in the majors. So they have a lot to draw on should they run into some injuries or any, or some poor performance with the guys they're starting with. So it has been a long time since we've been able to say that about a Tigers pitching staff, right? I mean, usually they're trying to scrape together that last starter. They're trying to get the last couple guys in the bullpen, somebody with a pulse. But now they have guys who should be on a major league roster, and they're starting on their major league roster, and they got guys behind them in Toledo to come and fill holes. So I'm kind of excited about that.
All right. I'm going to have to say, I think a big position of strength is, I would have to agree with the outfield and the starting pitching. In terms of just, you look at what the potential of Parker Meadows is going to be. If Riley Green mentioned that too, but I think one of the things that I'm interested in seeing outside of that is Justin Herrenbloy at some point, if he gets a call up, if he can play the outfield well in Toledo, if he earns up getting a call up, I'll be interested to see his journey to the majors and see how effective he can be. Again, you have to look at, I think the one thing that if he ends up getting the call up, can he make that transition to making sure he lays off those pitches and kind of have effective at bats? I mean, he know he can walk, but I just see him struggling with advanced stuff, but hopefully he can make that adjustment. But as Joe said here too, in the chat, Green has to avoid a freak injury. That's, I hate to say it, but that's, if the Tigers can avoid that, then I think they have a chance to win the division. If Green can stay more than 130 games, like we did our over unders for it, I think they could win. They can win the division that way.
Man, he was awfully good in between injuries last year. Like, you know, he really had an awesome stretch. He kind of struggled, I think, out of the gate, right? He was hitting a lot of those ground balls to second base. That's how you know he doesn't quite have it. But then when he stops doing that and starts hitting the line drives and you're in for some fun. I do, I mean, none of us mentioned the bullpen. I think the bullpen's pretty strong too. I do think that there's a little bit of a question mark with the closer just because we've seen Alex Lang so up and down. But the depth of the bullpen, I think, is really strong. I think the infield is just kind of weak. And a lot of that is falls on Javi Baez, honestly. And then the fact that there isn't really a set third baseman, but you're asking a lot from Colt Keith, who we like, obviously, but you know, you don't want to count on him to carry the team or anything like that. And then Torkelson hit 30 home runs last year. I think we're all hoping that he's going to top that, but you know, he did go out and have a terrible spring again. I don't know. Like, yeah, I just don't know if he's ever going to be that guy who's going to hit you for a decent average. So he might just be that CJ Krohn type, right? Who's going to hit you 230 with 30 bombs, and that's fine. But it's just not necessarily that keystone to the offense that everybody wants.
Yeah, I saw some people comparing Torkelson to Matt Olson on Twitter last week, and I just don't see it. In my opinion, we hope that Torque's like peak season is what Matt Olson's average season is, which is, I think he has like a 130 WRC plus for his career. So like, yeah. I think that's going to be peak Torkelson, and hopefully we get that within the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, I would rather right now at this point, I just would like for one of those guys, Spencer Torkelson, to take another step forward. And just show progress. If they show progress between Torkelson and Green, but I did like, I hate to say what old, I mean, old BK is right though. It's not a freak injury when you have one every season. True. I mean, you have to play a little differently, but he's not wrong either.
Yeah. Last year for me was, I've said it many times, I wanted to see Torkelson and Green become ball players, right? That was what the whole season was. They really didn't have any path toward contention. So it was, what kind of ball players do they become? We saw Torkelson hit the 30 homers, look more like at least a competent first baseman. So that was nice. Green looked good between the injuries, as Chris just said. So this year, to me, I think it takes on a different hue because I honestly think they can contend for the division, unlike last year. So it's not so much just watching individuals. is about watching the whole organization come together and put a winning team on the field. The individuals, though, that I want to pay attention to most this year are Casey Mize, who I think is really critical. He comes back and is a productive pitcher. Parker Meadows, and then, unfortunately, Green again, getting to 135, 140 games. If those three players are impactful this year, that takes this roster to another level because they, you know, weren't around for most of last season.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I give pause on. I still think that I'm still going to put hang on my hat on the fact that I think the Tigers still need to get another bat. If it comes with it from eternally, then that's great. But I think you're absolutely right. This team has to have a certain amount of health going for that to happen. And that's what I'm like. But then, because if you look at the farm system and go, okay, well, who's going to be the impact bat that can come up if an injury happens? Am I confident Justin Hemmer and Moy will be something? Sure. But again, there's the lack of a track record of the bats coming up and making an impact right away. That is still, the jury's still out on that. So
here's a question I have for you guys. Tell me what you think. Jace Young makes the AAA roster, right? Mm-hmm. I was a little bit surprised by that, to be honest with you. But hey, there he is.
I wasn't surprised on that, but go ahead.
Will they be as patient with him? If he gets off to a hot start, will they be as patient with him as they were with Molloy last year, where they basically kind of brushed off his hot start and he stayed where he was? Is Young a Toledo guy for all season? Or if he gets hot and this team is in...
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Is he in Detroit?
I think a lot of that depends on if anybody else at third base has shown anything. If Urshela, Vierling, Ibanez, McKinstry, if any of those guys look like they're having a good season, I think that they may just stick there. But yeah, if Young's tearing it up in Toledo and those guys are all kind of average or struggling, then it wouldn't shock me if they bring him up. I think this is a faster ascent than we've seen with some other guys. It's still, it's not like lightning speed, right? He basically, half a season at high A, half a season at double A, and maybe half a season at Toledo, and then off to the bigs. I think that makes sense for a player like him.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the over under fair, on the over unders. There's a lot of people think that Young will see most time at third base too. We'll talk about the scoreboard in a second because it's the second largest, only to, I believe, the Mets. There was a chance to go down to do the taste fest. Usually we do that, but I've been so slammed. Being sick last week put me behind, but we'll get to that. But Cameron, you want to cue up what we have here from we got some audio from Chris Castanelli, who got the chance to talk to AJ Hinch in regards to there's a few things he got to talk to him about. One of the clips was the first one, how you, because we're talking about the bullpen. And how the 9, 10, 11 guys in Toledo will be used a lot in the bullpen this year.
Kind of after going out and getting Shelby Miller and Chafin, did you kind of identify that as potentially being a strength of this team coming into the year?
Yeah, so I think there's eight, we're starting the season with eight. I think pitchers 9, 10, 11, and 12 that are in that are going to be in Toledo are going to impact us. And so I think what we have is we have versatility. We have guys that can go multiple one-ups, two-ups, even three times, three innings. That's a huge advantage whenever somebody runs a pitch count high, or you have some guys coming out like Casey's coming off an injury, or you have, you know, Maeda, who uses a lot of pitch equity in his games and ends up coming out in the fifth or sixth inning most of the time. There's other days where I'm going to be able to give him rest because guys go seven, eight, maybe even nine innings. So the fact that we're versatile in the pen and we throw strikes, we have a pretty good balance left and right, that I have a path to different style games. There's a reason last year we were great in bullpen games. And I know that's not traditionally something that people like, but it's pretty effective. And so when you can mix and match against the opponent and they see somebody different, that's pretty good. So when I look at our pen, I see that whatever we determine that we need against this particular part of the lineup, I feel like we have it. And I feel like we have a plan B. And that's a good feeling. It's not going to go perfect. Like, there's nothing worse than you have a plan, you target a guy, you walk out there, you put the ball in his hand, and then he rifles a base hit or he hits a homer. Yeah. Like, the feeling that you feel as a fan is the same thing that we feel in the dugout. But it wasn't done, haphazardly. It was done with a clear reason why we were trying to do it. It's just the competition that beat us. And if you get the buy-in from the player, which we do, and you get the work done to sharpen whatever weapons those guys have, that's where the pitching department comes in. You can have a dynamic pen and a very unpredictable one for the other manager to have to deal with.
If there's one thing, too, that you said during spring training that I liked about what you brought about Shelby Miller, for example, was the fact that they needed to get more strikeouts last year. The bullpen wasn't towards the middle, towards the bottom among strikeouts per nine. And so when he talked about Wilmer Flores using him as a kind of a three-inning possibility, it makes a lot of sense because Flores has that starter ability, and it gives him a kind of a different look so they decide to call him up. And I think with Flores, the one thing is about him is I think what potentially might expose him is if he can't, I've noticed this with his command on his slider. It's either really good or it just floats in there and it gets hammered. I mean, Chris, I mean, is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, it looked this spring, at least the beginning of the spring, like he just didn't have the breaking balls dialed in yet. Like, a lot of them were kind of casting away from his hand and floating toward the right-handed hitters and stuff like that. And that happened, spring breakout game where you saw he was trying to punch out the final batter and let one breaking ball go and got near his head, but then he threw a couple nasty ones in the dirt. Like, I that may be an issue for Flores going forward. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think he's certainly an option to pitch late innings at some point this year just because of the arm and the ability there. And it was interesting hearing AJ talk in that clip with Chris, which, again, great get for Chris.
Yes,
To have a whole hour as AJ Hinch is amazing. Something we learned last year is how they view bullpen usage. They talk about ups, right? Ups and downs. And people have heard this before. You know, they got to get their pitchers their ups, but they take it really seriously throughout the system. And they'll say that, like, okay, so-and-so has two ups today. He can do two innings, but they also count if you get a guy up early to warm up and then he doesn't come into the game, that counts as one to them. So, just interesting stuff that they do in the organization that it's fun to hear that from the top down.
So one of the fun things I took away from that little conversation was, can you imagine Jim Leland or Sparky Anderson using the phrase pitch equity?
No.
Which I love Hinch. That was great. It was a great answer. It makes a lot of sense, but I was just trying to picture Leland taking a drag and talking about pitch equity.
You gotta get out. We got a bunch of guys.
It also sounds like he only expects Maeda to get two times through the order, and he expects to have to bring someone else in. It's just weird to hear managers talk like that. And I like how he acknowledged the bullpen days.
They won a lot of them.
They were well over 500 in bullpen days, and it doesn't make sense because, like, Joey Wentz was like was used as a follower in a lot of those. But
well, I mean,
they won.
And there's a good point now where I saw a lot of people complaining about Joey Wentz making the roster. And it's just one of those things where the complaints are either that he's terrible and he sucks or, you know, along the lines of he doesn't do much for me, which is, I totally understand.
There's better guys in the league over here in Utica that are better than Joey Wentz.
It is one of those things. We've talked about this before, and it's sometimes it's a weird thing that baseball teams do is that they I think they think that there's more in the tank there with Joey Wentz, and they don't want to lose him, and he doesn't have any more options. And sometimes teams, I think you could probably argue that there are a pitcher or two in Toledo that probably may work out better, or at least early in the season, than Joey Wentz. But he gives them another hard-throwing lefty option who can go multiple innings. And I think that they think there's more in there, and they're not at this point where they want to win every single game, right? But there are going to be some games, as there are in every season, where it's just like, we just need somebody to go out there and eat some innings, and he's a guy who can do that.
Roger the voice.
But here's the thing, and the thing about Wentz is, you exactly just said it, Chris. He's a hard throwing lefty. That's something that doesn't grow on trees. So if you can find a lefty, I mean, look at a guy, for example, like Andrew Vasquez, who's a lefty but offers it from a completely different angle. You have a guy like Wentz who can throw – the biggest pitch for him that struggles is the cutter. And when he can't throw the cutter, he can't locate that, it just makes him very vulnerable. That being said, there's still enough to work with there. And, I mean, that's why, like, Tyler Alexander has a job in Tampa. I mean, that's what it is. Yep. And Alex Samuel's question here – you think Alex Lang remains the main option in the ninth? I say he hesitates to say closer because, right, does he get replaced? I think what's going to happen is I think he has the option of going to somebody like Shelby Miller. I mean, I think Miller has good wipeout closer stuff. I think it's Alex Fajardo, which Troy wants to know if he's still a starter. I think Fajardo can do both. And yeah. So there's a possibility. I think Fajardo, what's going to be nice about him is he has that stuff there where he could be either a good long reliever or a guy that can come in the eighth and ninth and really get things done.
I just wonder if, as when they get to like the sixth and seventh inning, if they kind of chart out where things are going to be in the ninth, if they have two lefties coming up, I mean, is it Chafin or Holton versus Lang, you know, that kind of thing. Because I could see that happening, maybe Chafin getting a couple of those opportunities if the lineup looks favorable to him.
Yeah, you know, it's something we actually discussed this in the Discord a little bit about. You know, AJ Hinch is pretty good about not sticking guys in traditional roles. Like he will use Jason Foley in the sixth inning or fifth inning if he feels like he really needs a ground ball double play or something like that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think he does prefer to have those established roles. Because I think the players prefer that. I think that Alex Lang likes to know that he's the ninth inning guy, and Foley likes to know he's like the eighth inning guy. And I do think that Lang will get the plurality of the save opportunities this year. We saw last year he was really good for a couple months and then had a really rough, it was 6 weeks or so.
At least.
And it eventually got back into closing games by the end of the year and ended up, you know, I think 20-something saves. And I think he'll probably stick in that role, barring injury, just because, as Roger's saying, you know, there's not that one like huge 15 strikeout per nine arm in this bullpen that screams closer right now. There are a bunch of really good pieces, and I could see five or six different guys getting saves this year, but I still think it'll be Lang for the majority of the time.
Yeah, they don't really. I mean, we could see Jason Foley at some point too, but he would offer a completely different look too. We'll get to there's somebody was mentioning the Wyatt Langford stuff. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that shortly. So that being said, we're gonna be doing what was the other? I lost my train of thought on this. I feel like we're going in a direction now. All of a sudden,
we had our predictions, and I don't know if we were going to talk about those at all.
Yes, I have. I'm actually pulling those up right now, so those will be up here in just a quick second. As far as like just the weakness, in terms of like weaknesses, I know we talked about strength a little bit. what does concern me about the weakness factor about this team is really it's, I think it's the infield. And I say that because here's why. If Cole Keith, let's say Cole Keith gets off to a bad start offensively, you have Javi Baez already struggling. And any Baez, you know, like there was games last year where he would be very, very productive and then he just win these lulls. The infield to me is a weakness. And that's where I think that is a concern where at some point, if Torkelson isn't hitting for power, I mean, do you need the infield to be a bunch of boppers? No, but you'd want, who's a hitter among that? I mean, is it Cole Keith the best hitter? I mean, in terms of hitting, not just power, but hitter in the infield.
I think probably, yeah.
Puts the ball in the air more.
Yeah, I mean, Vierling hits for solid average, right? But yeah, but there's not a whole lot of impact there, at least not yet.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird to think that, isn't it? I mean, I'm not crazy for thinking that, right? It's just...
On top of that, it could be pretty bad fielding infield. I mean, Torkelson's good at scooping, not good at fielding. Keith has his struggles. Baez can be elite to bad. And then third base is a platoon of guys who don't really play third base. So,
yeah, I mean, that scares me. I mean, that's a really legitimate concern that you have a real kind of rough and I don't want to say rough and tumble. I hate saying that word, but a really rough makeup for an infield. I mean, it's just, it doesn't bode well defensively, even depth wise too, because I mean, like you look at, so, okay, are you going to then go to the light hitting Zach McKinstry to solve your issues? I don't know. That to me might be a long-term. That's why I get paused about the people getting to talk about divisions, if you will, but the infield does legitimately scare me. So we'll start with staff predictions. Chris and Cameron, Chris, give us let me see if I can give a better view than this. I can't do that. I didn't do it that way. All right. Well, anyway, stat predictions, Chris. 84 and 78. And so we did this by just like the teams that will go into the postseason.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at this because I almost always just pick the teams that made the playoffs last year. but Baltimore looks pretty damn good to me. I think Minnesota is just, they had a bunch of injuries, and I could see the Tigers winning the division or even Cleveland somehow. But I think Minnesota has just a little bit too much offense compared to the rest of the division. Texas, I think, is really good. They did win the World Series, and they're adding Wyatt Langford. the Astros are always good. I think Seattle has really good pitching, right? And Julio is awesome. And I like Toronto to edge out the Yankees. I think they're pretty close. I don't trust the Yankees to ever stay healthy. You know, when you've got Stanton and you got Judge, they're just too big for their own good. So without Cole for who knows how long, like a month, maybe 6 weeks, maybe 2 months. So that's why I went with there. And you could see the rest of it there. I've got the Braves and the Cubs and the Dodgers and the Phillies and the Diamondbacks and the Padres, I guess maybe slight surprise. And I went with Juan Soto and Mookie Betts for the MVP.
All right. Cameron?
Yeah. So actually it looks like you copy and pasted wrong here. My standings are mostly the same. I have Toronto, or I have the Yankees instead of Toronto.
Oh,
which is a little different from Chris.
Yeah,
Then we both have Juan Soto as MVP for the American League, but I think Corbin Carroll will win MVP in the National League. I guess my hot take picks are I have Skubal winning American League Cy Young, and I have Parker Meadows winning Rookie of the Year in the American League.
Did you have the Tigers win in the division or no?
No, I think the Twins will win the division. I think Parker Meadows will beat Wyatt Langford, Rookie of the Year, just based off stolen bases and fielding. I think he'll be able to accumulate one or one and a half more WAR than Wyatt Langford. And then I'm hoping for a 2020 season. So
that'd be awesome.
Oh man, that'd be sweet to have a kind of 20 season, something like that. Because I don't want to have the same copy and paste errors, but I will just instead just do the way I should have done in the first place when I did these stat predictions and just shared the screen or shared a little differently, but so I went a little bit of a different route with as far as like picking my MVP, by the way, for American League is going to be who I think. Did we go with who picked Julio? Anybody pick Julio Rodriguez, by the way?
I didn't know. I had Soto and
okay. So I thought Julio Rodriguez, I don't know. I think if he can go ahead and have a good monster season and put the Mariners on his back, I think it will be phenomenal. I think it'd be a great story. And Mookie Betts in the NL, I mean, that's just a given.
I mean, if he produces like he did last year and he's playing shortstop, come on now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I did pick St. Louis because the Cardinals are just sneaky as hell and they find ways to do it. And I'm a big fan of Mason Wynn. So I'm a big fan of the Cardinals will come out and with their rebuilt pitching staff. I think the Cubs, Arizona has a setback. I think they get into the wild card a little bit. I think they make a play for the wild card. I couldn't pick Tigers in good conscience to win the division as much as it's just, again, the offense kind of scares me. I did pick Tarek Skubal to win the American League Cy Young because I just want that to happen really bad. And this does not pain me whatsoever. Wyatt Lamford for Rookie of the Year, Jackson Chiro in the NL. I mean, I think Langford, I was going to think of like a pitcher that's going to come out of nowhere, but I just really didn't see that happening. And then Youper, you're the outliner. You're the one that has the Tigers win the division. You want to go ahead and you also have Cole Keefe winning the Rookie of the Year. And I like that a lot.
And if he does, that's the big reason why they win the division. So, you know, here's the thing. I just have spent so many of the last few years expecting the worst, and I've always been typically on the low end of our spectrum of wins predictions, sometimes crazily so. But, again, I just look at this season as a possibility, and there's no guarantee. When you make predictions, I mean, it's all in fun. But they have enough positives, potential positives, that I think it can outweigh the players on the bottom end of the roster that tank the whole thing, right? And I think the pitching depth is enough that their run prevention should be pretty decent, especially in their division, which is still not full of offensive powerhouses. I think their run prevention will be good enough that if their run production only gets up into, say, the low 20s or the high teens, and it's not a massive improvement, just a small improvement, I think they can win 87 games. And nobody else in that division worries me too much about going past 87 games. I mean, Twins might, but I wouldn't count on that.
All right. I mean, I understand where the logic is. I mean, I just I'm still concerned about the offense is where I get positive. But, yeah, you know what, Youper? I mean, I'm glad that you're coming around being optimistic.
I'm the optimist, yeah. You know, I also for the Rookie of the Year, put Cole Keith, I went the whole opposite with Shota Imanaga for the Cubs, older player, but certainly someone who I think if the Cubs are going to contend, and I think they can because I think the Cubs, boy, you look at their roster overall, there's nobody that knocks your socks off, but there's nobody that sucks either. You know, I think they have enough to hang in and win that division because I don't think the NL Central is that great. MVP, I went with Acuna in the National League. I know Betts is probably the favorite, but I'm a big Ronald Acuna guy. And in the American League, I took Corey Seager. So I think they're going to play a lot of big games there. He seems to have a knack for rising to the occasion. So we'll see if he puts up some good numbers, and I think he could get an MVP award.
All right. Here's my pick last year. I will say this about, you know, Langford stuff. I know it's just going to be an issue forever because he's been so good. but it's just hard in baseball. You just don't know because it's almost apples to oranges. You've got a high schooler and a college player, and they're 3 years apart in age. It's light years in professional baseball development. I could go back to 2006 when the Tigers had a kid they wanted to draft, a high school kid they wanted to take in the draft, but the college pitcher fell to them, the best pitcher in the draft. So instead of taking Clayton Kershaw, they took Andrew Miller. Now, you know, They ended up using him to trade for Cabrera. It would have been Kershaw traded for Cabrera anyway, whatever. But, you know, in the end, and Miller made the majors almost immediately because he was the best player. And it was like, oh, this is going to be a stud. And it just didn't work out that way. You know, we have to wait to see. And sometimes you can't tell for a decade or more. I think it was 2009. Was that the Steven Strasburg draft? I think that was it. And Strasburg, you know, the best college pitching prospect ever, right? Comes up, has the best prospect debut ever. 10, 15 picks later, I believe it was the Giants took a high school kid named Zach Wheeler. And then, you know, they traded him to the Mets for, I think, Carlos Beltran. And he's bounced around, been hurt and stuff like that. But 15 years later, Strasburg's done. And Zach Wheeler looks like one of the best pitchers in baseball and you know, could be for the next decade. It's you can't tell right now. It's way too early to know who made the right pick here.
And, you know, Mike also Trout things
was,
like, no, go ahead.
Yeah.
Mike Trout was drafted 25th that year. So, like,
yeah.
Tigers took Jacob some guy.
Yeah, there's some guy way down the list for 2023 that's probably be better than Langford and Clark.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look at not just because it happened to one guy doesn't mean it's going to happen to the next guy. But you know, for everybody who's excited about Langford, he should be. He's obviously killing it right now, and we loved him coming out of the draft. That's great. But boy, you know who else looked good in spring training? It was Jared Kelenic. You know, yeah. I mean, there's a guy who was killing the ball. You think, oh, there's a star, and all of a sudden he faces the real bullets of major league pitching in the regular season, and things are different, you know, and I'm not saying that happens to Langford, but facts are tomorrow is his first real game. Everything that's happened so far has been kind of funsies. Okay. This is the real thing starting tomorrow. So we'll see what he brings to the table.
And there's also the possibility that they're all really good.
Yeah.
Like that happened that, like, you know, there was the year Bryce Harper and Manny Machado both went in the top three and that worked out. And then what was it? 2005 where everybody was good except for poor, the catcher that the Mariners drafted, but it was like Ryan Zimmerman and Ryan Braun and even people like Ricky Romero even had a couple good run before he disappeared. It was incredible draft. So it's just too early to tell anything.
All the comments in here tonight are on point. So one of the things that did come out today was the new scoreboard over at Comerica, which is now, like I mentioned it earlier, the second largest only to the Mets. And it is it might look familiar for people who play video games, and we'll see what I mean by this. It is the giant T from Tetris. I mean, if you really think about it, it's like the kind of Tetris like shape to that.
So, it's a big one. Well, wow. in not just the scoreboard, they updated all the TVs that were around the park. They were still like 2003 era tube TVs. Now they're flat screens, and hopefully they'll be working and you'll be able to hear the radio and stuff. They're making improvements to the ballpark experience, which is good.
Here's a question I have.
Pass down the ticket prices.
As someone, I'm going to be the first to admit this, as a Tiger fan my lifelong, I went to one game at Tiger Stadium. I have never been to Comerica Park. I've seen the Tigers all over the country, except in Detroit, really. That massive scoreboard, what's that going to do to how the field plays? I mean, is that enough to affect the wind?
I don't think so. I mean, if you think about the size of it, and in terms of just like, it's not, I mean, as far as it's sticking to one area, I mean, it's not protruding out, if you will, or anything like that.
And I've never known Comerica to be terribly affected. I'm like, you know, it's a baseball stadium. It gets affected by wind, but it's kind of sunken down for one thing. So there's a little bit, there's a lot of wind. There's time where you get a lot of wind on the concourse when you walk in. And I'm sure, you know, you get the baseball up in the air, it gets affected. But I don't know. I mean, you never know. Honestly, you know, any cosmetic changes to a ballpark can have adverse side effects, but I don't know. It has the two areas for air underneath. I don't know if that's going to create some sort of vortex.
Yeah, exactly. I just wonder if it's going to, because it's so big.
I mean, we'll have to get Dr. Bart Smith back on the air and talk to him.
You know, if it was just a run-of-the-mill scoreboard, I wouldn't even think twice about it. But now they're touting how big it is. I just wonder if that's going to block any wind. But it may not.
The biggest scoreboard is always like the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. It's like, oh, it's just our turn. It'll be Tampa next year. I'm like, oh, look at this. So I don't know, enjoy it, I guess, but it'll look a lot better with a bunch of crooked numbers on it for the Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be pretty cool. I'm just in seeing how the Tigers can – they're starting – like, look, if I will say this. If there's one thing about the Tigers in the last year or two, they're trying to get a little bit of a sense of humor, a little bit, and they're kind of maybe more being more self-aware of things. They know they have to improve their in-game experience. They know they have to do these things because people notice it. I mean, even on social media, too. And so as much as – like, for example, tomorrow I'm doing a presentation, AL Central review for Sabre, for the Sabre, for our Sabre chapter. And I was talking to Gary Gillette, who's our Sabre chapter president. And he's like, he was asking me, he goes, you know, Roger, just make sure that, you know, we're going to keep it real, you know, if you will. And you know, I'm going to talk about the farm system and all that and just how it's made some steps, but you know, it's the Tigers are watchable. As Deadly Ninja Bees just said, he is absolutely correct. All we're looking for in the stretch of season tomorrow is, I'll close with this, really. I think for the first time in probably in a decade plus, that I'm actually not having a sense that I'm gonna crap my pants watching this team. Like, I'm just not gonna, it's the other shoe's not gonna fall. I mean, I think there's gonna be times where it struggles, but it's going to be an entertaining product. That is what all I can ask for. If the Tigers win, you know, I put them at 85 wins. They win 85 wins for the first winning season since 2016. That's all I can ask for. If it can be a topic of conversation, the Tigers have, again, they hired a guy by the name, they hired Jason Benetti. They've done some things, so you have to go and go, crap. It's not, I mean, we were talking about the White Sox earlier. All their offseason headlines were absolute trash. I mean, the White Sox got smoked. The Royals, to a certain extent, too. I mean, the Royals, you know, I can't say the Royals had like the worst offseason than the White Sox, but the Twins didn't do much. Cleveland didn't do much. And then you look at some of the headlines across Detroit did, for all the bitching that people talk about the bats, the lack of free agents, you know, like here, like, and here we are. I don't have to work. Like, we're not talking about Nico Goodrum making the roster, which he, by the way, congratulations to him. He's on the 40-man roster for the Rays. Mm-hmm. We're not sitting here. I don't have to stretch to talk about things. There's plenty to talk about. And I've been doing this for so long. I think we've been doing this for a long time. I know Cameron's relatively new, but the person company, I mean, the point is, if Cameron is coming out of his shell to talk about baseball, then you know that you're saying something to a fan who has been watching this product for so long that he doesn't remember the last time they were good. Is that fair to say, Cameron, as an adult? As an adult.
So yeah. My Twitter bio, since I started my Twitter in 2021, my Twitter bio is Tigers fan who is trying to feel the high they had during the Jim Leland era. Mm-hmm. Right? That was middle school. That was middle school, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Late elementary school and middle school. I just want that feeling back. That feeling of being up 11 o'clock at night, watching them clinch the ALDS, Phil Koch, throw his glove on the ground. Like, amazing feeling. I just want to feel that again, but as an adult. Is that too much to ask for?
No. No,
it's never.
Yeah.
And it'll be, it's been long enough now that once they do it again, I don't know if it'll be quite like 2006 was, but it'll be a celebration again because it's been rough. And then you get complacent, right? You just expect the Tigers to be good every year. And they were there for a while. And then it just ends. I thought 2016, I thought they had a chance. And I guess they technically did, and then it just collapsed. And boy, I guess we could just I'm just hoping for the high again before we have to think about the fall in the future.
Yeah, we haven't done a podcast where the Tigers have been over 500. I mean, like as a complete season.
Yeah, as no, complete, I think. Go ahead. I think we were talking about not that long ago was who was it? Who was it that was a free agent? The pitcher. Yeah, he was the kid who hit Jonathan Scope. Like, it was first thing he did. He broke Jacoby Jones. I don't know. We were discussing the weird 2020 season and how the Tigers had played the Brewers, and they brought in a guy to make his major league debut, and he hit two people immediately, including he broke Jacoby Jones' hand. Tigers won that game like 12-1, and were like 17-16 on September 1st, 2020, and then they went like 6-20, and that's probably the last time they've been above 500. Certainly in September.
Bickford, thank you, Michael.
Phil Bickford.
Yep, Michael again. Michael Mayer is the resident genius in our YouTube chat. I kid you not. I feel like if there's a closer, if we had a save all time saves leader, Michael Mayer would be our saves leader. And as far as like bailing our asses out, he would. You know what? He should be the fact checker. He should be the official historian of this podcast, because for how many times, like, you know how it was? Is it PTI where they have the guy at the end of the show who's like
Tony Reality? Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, Tony Reality. He's the Tony Reality.
I don't know if he still does that or not. I haven't watched PTI in forever.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
I don't either. But it will be nice that here we are doing two shows a week, of course, schedule allows that. And I'm traveling for work. I'm in Toronto in June, and I'm going to do a podcast because, no, it's not too far. Mike's like, that might be going too far, but thanks. No, dude, you're good. You're good people. Anyway, that I'm doing a remote podcast somewhere because, you know, people want to talk about the Tigers. That would be awesome. And, you know, or I'm in the press box after the game and people are not looking at me because I'm talking with the microphone on top of a trash can, looking at me like I'm an idiot going, and the Tigers, lose 7-1. You know, it's like, that's not, yeah. So, but yeah, that's just meaningful baseball. That's all I can ask for.
All right. Well, what do we think tomorrow?
Tomorrow, to me, is so big because more than a normal opening day for me, because expectations have been so low for so long, right? Most years, any given game, I want them to win every time. But if they lose, whatever. Okay, you move on. But let's face it, if they want to contend this year, if the plan is to win this division, you have to take 2 out of 3 on opening weekend from the Chicago White Sox, because they are the dregs of the league by all estimation by most people. So all of a sudden there's, you know, the win in April counts as much as the win in September. So they can't drag their feet in April this year like they have the last few years. They got to win some ball games and might as well start tomorrow.
I was going to ask what you guys think the first nine is, like what you think the record is after the first nine. Is 3 against the White Sox, 3 against the Mets, 3 against Oakland. I know typically we do last 10, but first nine, what do you think the record is?
I mean, they should come out at 6-3, but it's baseball, so I'm going to say 5-4.
I was going to say 5-4 would be very acceptable, but 6-3 would raise an eyebrow and make me pretty happy.
Yeah, I'm hoping 6-3 too.
I'm gonna be the high man on this. They go 7-2.
Seven and two.
And
never look back.
7-2. Roll it. Put it in the books.
I've got two quick questions about tomorrow, because I've seen some discussion about this. They are facing Garrett Crochet, a hard throwing lefty. Who do you think is going to bat lead off, and how many lefties are in the lineup?
Vierling bats lead off because Parker Meadows is going to replace him in like the 5th or 6th inning. And I think they start Keith and Carpenter. And Green.
I would think Vierling leads off. Meadows starts in center and hits 8th or something. Mm. Lefties are in the lineup, though. I don't know.
I mean, they have 4 options now, at least 4. I don't think we're going to see McKinstry in the starting lineup, but
Keith and Meadows.
Yeah, I'm going to go Keith and Meadows.
Well, but there is also Green and Carpenter, right? So there's 4.
Oh, well, yeah, wait.
Well, Green, I wasn't even thinking Carpenter. Green, you're right, obviously. So 3. But does Carpenter have to start? I don't know if he has to start.
No, I keep thinking that Carpenter is not going to start. I get that sense that Canna might hit lead off tomorrow just because he's that veteran. I mean, Vierling's a vet now, too, but I mean, he's going to be the on-base guy. But, yeah, I'm going back and forth between I mean, Green's going to play. We know Green's going to play. He's going to be in the lineup no matter what. I don't think Hinch is going to sit Colt Keith in his first,
I don't think so either.
First game. So I feel like he's going to hit. And he and Meadows have had, in the last year or two in the minors, haven't had any real platoon splits that I recall. But Carpenter has in the big leagues. So I'm thinking that Carpenter may ride the bench for the first three, four innings. And Hinch loves bringing power guys off the bench, right? So bring that righty in. The first thing you do is you slide Vierling down to third to replace Urshela or whoever's playing there, Ibanez, and then Carpenter hits a three-run bomb for you. But I don't know. It's something I've been interested to think about. And by the time people listen to this, it might already have been decided. So who cares?
Then, all right, we'll leave with the podcast with this. Who hits the first home run of the year and when?
Baez.
And yes, Javi second. Baez. I was going to pick Baez, too.
It's in Chicago, too.
Yes.
Torkelson's going deep.
There you go.
You know what? I'm going to go with Andy Baez. We'll do it just because he's been.
I like that.
Yeah. I think he is a first home run of the year. So, all right. All that being said, we are out of here. We will be in Toledo on Friday for the home opener. Probably there a little early, Chris. I don't know about you, man, but I don't want to get down there at 2 because if we get down there at 2, it's going to be madhouse.
Game is 4, right?
Yeah. Although I think we either get there really early or we get there like right when the game starts.
No, it's probably a good idea to get there early.
Yeah. So we'll be out there Friday for the Tiger Mountain Report home opener. Well, tour of home opener, but then Monday we'll be doing our first show for that. And then we'll end up, like I said, there'll be our next show will probably be, I don't know, we'll figure it out. You know, you guys, you know, but
this is anyway, right.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. Please subscribe to us on our YouTube channel. If you have not subscribed to our YouTube channel, what the hell are you doing? Please do so. Motor City Metrics and the Tiger Mindly Report. Subscribe to them both. We don't bother you too much, we promise. And if you want to donate, please, there's a donation link. It's been scrolling on the bottom. All the proceeds go back to the website and up cost equipment. I'm buying the shirts for the gentlemen this weekend. So they're getting polos like this, and the Tiger Mindly guys as well. And I will put a show. Yes, Joe, absolutely. I'll put a donate link in the show description on YouTube, or if I did not already. No, I did not. I'll put that on the show description on the podcast side of things. So definitely, Joe, we will do that for you. So anyway, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon, and happy baseball opening day, everybody.
Enjoy.
We made it. Yes, we made it. We made it. No more college basketball, whatever you do in your free time.
NFL draft.
Yeah, especially in Detroit. Hallelujah.